On this episode of The Wendy Edwards Show, Brian Weimer and Trevor Perjeski are here from the Filmmakers Republic here in Charlottesville, Virginia, bringing Central Virginia's creative talents together to make movies that are Hollywood bound. Also, we've got the photographers coming up, an acoustic folk duo from Traverse City, Michigan. We'll tell you more about them in just a little bit, and we'll be hearing songs from the photographers on The Wendy Edwards Show.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I'm like a train, my lord, I keep on chugging on. You're still not gone from my mind, but I haven't got the
time. I'm Sarah Blacker. I'm a singer-songwriter from Boston. And Wendy Edwards is all about paying it forward. She drives across the country to support art. She puts a message out into the world to be positive and to be honest. And to use your brain, to use your heart, and to help others. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, your neural pathways will strengthen themselves because you will get smarter. You will learn about music. You'll learn about art. You'll learn about intelligent thought. And it will change your life so that you become a more positive thinker, too. Positive thought inspires positive event, inspires a positive life. So listen to Wendy because she's a positive gal.
Tear you apart. Thank you for listening to Wendy Edwards on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I am in the studio with Brian Weimer and Trevor, Perjeski.
Correct.
I didn't mess it up.
No, that was good.
Fantastic. They're from the Filmmakers Republic here in Charlottesville, Virginia, and we're here to talk about some projects that they're working on. First, I'd like to know how the Filmmakers Republic came together, and either one of you is welcome to tell me about that.
Well, it's all funded actually by Russia. Really, it's here to subvert the American culture and bring it to its knees, to bring communism actually, and in its worst version, socialism, to our shores.
One low budget horror film at a time.
Exactly.
That does explain the K in Republic rather than the C.
Yes.
Now I understand.
Now, the real reason was, we are all independent filmmakers, and the world of independent filmmaking is a very lonely one, and we cry and sit in the corner. But we don't have funding, we don't have resources, we just have a lot of will and ideas. And if we do it independently, we can perhaps get one project done a year alone, and that's really kind of even pushing it. However, if you pool your resources and time and energies, you can get lots done. And actually, it was influenced. I was at a horror convention in Kentucky a couple of years ago.
This is Brian Weimer, who did the film Danger Zombies Run through Amoeba Films.
Right. And it was the first real Filmmakers Republic project experiment. But anyway, these Kentucky folks, they were all these like young people who were making these movies, and they all had movies, like a dozen of them. And each one had a movie, but each one was working on each other's stuff. Like, okay, I'll be DP on yours, and you direct mine, and I'll star in yours, and on yours I'll do catering, and on yours I'll do blood effects.
Right.
But they were just doing all these movies. I mean, some of them were not very good, but some of them, you know, had promise, and I guarantee you they're going to come out with some stuff that people are going to be like, wow. And the more you work on it, the better you get. So the notion was, hey, all you independent folks in Central Virginia, let's get together and do the same thing. And so since then, I mean, it was sort of an idea. Let's go try it.
Right.
And I like ideas. The first real big project was Danger Zombies Run. We had a couple meetings, talked about some projects, and we said, let's just go shoot something. Let's all get together. And it ended up being... actually ended up being over 100 people. There were 75 people on the original set, and then some of the later thing, there were about 25.
Are all people who independently would be making films in Central Virginia, but because you put the call out there, came together and said, sure, I'll put some time in.
Right. But it was to say, let's shoot a movie in a weekend. And that's sort of absurd to say, but we had five camera crews running with a fairly improvised script, and everybody kind of threw in something. It was purely collaborative, and it was an experiment. And that experiment ended up being shown at the Virginia Film Festival. It sold out. It's traveled around to six or seven other festivals. It's had invitations to Tel Aviv and Czech Republic and things like that. And it's just kind of bizarre. And I've gotten in contact with three distributors who want to look at it. And, you know, for an experiment and just to say what would happen if we all worked together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was fairly naive and idealistic, but, and I can't say that the movie's perfect, but we're very proud of it. And since then, we did a holiday short called Fiber Optic Angel, which Trevor here wrote and I shot. And again, a lot of people just working together to make it happen. No money there, no whatever.
Just people with some time that they dedicated to the project.
Right. But everybody's got resources. Some people have, you know, sound equipment. Some people, I've got camera stuff. Some people have dollies. Some people just have time. Some people want to do costume. But
I have a shiny head.
Exactly. But filmmaking requires everything. And it's not just the film itself. It's people who do web work, because now social networking is how you distribute your film.
Mm-hmm.
It's graphic design people. It's musicians. It's, you know, people who cook food, because, you know, that's one thing to make people happy on a film set, especially if you're not paying them, is to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it's to say now, anybody, everybody who in Charlottesville or its surrounding areas, I mean, we have people coming from Lynchburg, we have people coming from all over the place to come and participate in films and say, what can you get in on? And you can learn stuff. You can learn how to shoot. And we've been training lots of people in editing and all sorts of things. So now the consideration is, how many projects can we do? Now we've got documentaries. We've got one documentary about the making of the movie Plan 9 from Outer Space. We've got another potential documentary about dads who are in bands. We have a summer film called Billy Barnwell's Favorite Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably rattle off another five, but we're all contributing. And we meet the third Thursday of every month and pitch ideas. We just shot a musical called Karate Tango, which was based on a play that was done locally. And again, it's in the can. You mm-hmm. know, there's another movie. And it's just to say, wow, a year and a half ago, none of this stuff existed. Now we've got all this other stuff. Pyrometheus was part of a Filmmakers Republic thing, and that was with the Scintillation Fire Troop, another feature film. Just to say, we can keep making these. I'd love for the state to come and fund them some more, and that'll help make them happen. Or else private. I mean, we've had Kickstarter campaigns where people privately fund and just say, here's $100, $25, $1,000, go make a movie.
Yeah.
We support you. So.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And for an actor and a writer, I mean, for any kind of performer, the Filmmakers Republic projects are great because they're really truly collaborative. I mean, rather than having, you know, the genius who has the idea and directs everybody and tells everybody what to do, you
right.
really have a bunch of people coming together with different ideas on one project or multiple projects. And it really is. I mean, it's like shooting Danger Zombies Run. I've made this comparison before, but it was like summer camp. I mean, everybody came in there excited to do this thing. And even though there was a director, there were five camera crews. And in a way, everybody was sort of directing kind of their own thing in a way, but it sort of
collaborated
ended up in this very yeah. kind of unique and organic, weird collaboration that was really fun to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And that at the very least looks like a lot of fun on film. I think when you see the film, you know, it looks like people really having a good time doing, you know, doing their craft and just making a film. And it really, you know, I think it really showed. So, and it's just fun projects to do.
Well, yeah. Trevor, I want to get into how you heard about the Filmmakers Republic and how you joined up with Brian. And because we've gone over quite a bit in a very short time, I'll be back in just a moment to break things down a little bit, and we'll just do one section at a time from the Filmmakers Republic to the films that are coming out. And we'll start with Trevor next on The Wendy Edwards Show.
I'm Steve Dismukes. I write and draw a weekly updating webcomic called Dark Places at darkplacescomic.com. I'm also a freelance illustrator. And Wendy's very good at spotting what other people can do and what they can be and helping them to find that themselves and to bring it out and show it to the world. Wendy's podcast is a great way for her to bring this skill of hers. I think the next voiceover star is a very good example of allowing people who wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to get their voices heard. It's a really good way to showcase people who do have remarkable talent, might not necessarily be appreciated or recognised in their day-to-day lives. One thing that people should know about Wendy is that she really does care. She's really interested in finding out about people and helping them to flourish. She's very good at finding the good in people and interested in people, which is a really big, really valuable trait. So now I've been doing my webcomic Dark Places for two and a bit years now, and it's going very well. She keeps on with encouragement, keeps on pushing me to step beyond my comfort zones and to fulfill my potential. Others can benefit from listening to Wendy because she's very passionate about helping people follow their dreams. She's happiest when she's helping other people to shine.
And we're back with Brian Weimer from Filmmakers Republic and Trevor Prajewski. Thank you. See, I knew I'd mess it up somehow. Also with Filmmakers Republic. Now, Trevor, you are an independent filmmaker as well.
I kind of remember, I think even before we went to Kentucky.
You were with him.
The Mantra film, the first film that we sent down there. But I remember even before that, Brian and I and a couple other guys sitting around a fire pit in my backyard having this conversation about, you know, there's so many people in this town with talent who want to make films, who are doing these little projects, but it takes them forever and they don't have the resources. What would happen if we just kind of pulled everything together? So I think, you know, it even may have germinated from that conversation. But it's just been something, you know, Brian and I started making we made a couple short films together for Adrenaline Film Projects. God, 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
How long have you known each other?
Since childhood. No.
I'd say our kids were in school together, so probably
6 years.
Six or seven years.
And so were you also a filmmaker when you met?
I was an actor. I moved here from Chicago where I was doing some theater in Chicago and some improv. And I've written some things. So I had some acting background coming into it. When I met Brian at the time, he was interested in making films, and so we had a like interest, and so we just kind of, I think the first short film we did was in Virginia Beach, and Brian called me and said, hey, we're going to Virginia Beach and we're making this short film and I got a crew coming and there's going to be a couple other actors. And we got down there and basically everybody bailed except me and Brian. So we made a short film. We actually made you had to draw your genre. And I think we drew a silent film, fortunately, because we didn't have a sound guy. And
well, actually the story is first what we drew was Femme Fatale. And it was just two of us. We had no actresses. We had no whatever. And it was, okay, how are we going to... Actually, it ended up being that, though.
Yeah, we made a film. We made a 5-minute or 6-minute film about a guy who has a torrid affair with a Barbie doll. And it was great. It was fun because she just did, you know, she did whatever we needed her to do and didn't ask for money or even dinner. And, you know, so
direction must have been easy also.
But the great thing, it was an experiment again in resources. I mean, we went down with sort of bare bones, no crew, ended up picking up our actress in a dollar store, and the film won several awards there. And it was just to say, wow, if you can do that, then, you know, what could you do with time and a real crew and money and those sorts of other things.
And an actress.
And an actress. Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's been true with a lot of the projects that the Filmmakers Republic has done, is that it starts with, I mean, resources are great. There's no substitute for having a budget and money and good equipment. But if you can bring people together who have an idea and some energy and some imagination and inventiveness, you can make a project that people are going to want to see. It doesn't necessarily take $1 million. Not that I would turn down $1 million if somebody wanted to, you know, to give it to us. But it really, if you have creative people who are having fun with what they're doing, you can make a good product and you can make films that people want to see. And I think, you know, we've proven that to some extent.
You can, and I think that's a strength of Brian Weimer's, that when people have an idea, you see the potential for the idea, and I watch you motivate other people and find their strengths and pull them together. I've noticed you're very good at that, Brian, that you will see something in someone and say, they could be helpful in this way, and you'll bring it out of them in an encouraging way that makes them want to be part of the project.
Well, I just think that all ideas are good. And even when somebody throws out something that kind of seems preposterous at the time, later on, it'll kind of bubble through. There's a guy in the group, Jay Hatfield, who kept on suggesting some sort of an idea of somebody in a wheelchair. He himself is in a wheelchair. And, you know, okay, it's a story about a guy in a wheelchair who blah, blah, blah. A story about a guy, and you're like, okay, Jay, enough. But we ended up making a movie about a guy in a wheelchair, and we had one. And so it's just to say, work with what you've got, and you'll end up with something that's completely unique. You know, somebody's got a unicorn costume. They're going to be wearing it in the film. You know, whatever you bring to the party, we'll use. And it's those aspects of it that when people watch the film, they go, oh, my God, there's a guy in a unicorn costume.
I did not hear that
every time we show it in the movie theater. Like, you just hear this murmur of like, oh, my God, I was like, I need a unicorn costume. What the heck is that? So I don't know. It comes actually. Anthony Burgess, the guy who wrote Clockwork Orange, allegedly wrote it with a random word generator. He just kind of pulled some things out of a hat. It was like Hitler and Beethoven and orange and something. I don't know. But it's just that it throws you out of a very linear track.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, I'm going to make a slasher movie, and it'll be this, and this. And it's like, well, you've just followed all the traditional things. But what happens if you just throw a stool? Okay, I'm looking at a stool here. What's that about? You know, and you go from there. It's a person who kills somebody with stools. Oh, why is it a stool?
Right.
It's a bar stool. He's a disgruntled bartender. And all of a sudden you create a story.
Right.
And it's probably easier than trying to say, okay, let's come up with an original idea. Go.
It's easier and it's harder in some ways. And coming from an improv background, I think one of the reasons I've enjoyed working with Brian and these different projects is coming from an improvisational background. In a way it's easier, but it's also a lot more challenging and threatening to throw yourself at nothing than to have this nice, safe, conventional script where you know who the good guy is and who's going to die at the end and all. And I know working with on Mantra, which is the first feature film that I worked on with Brian, you know, a lot of that was like that scene in Apollo 13 or whatever, where they're all standing around the table going, we have to make this fit into this. I mean, a lot of it really was those late nights. I mean, some of these things were at 2 a.m. where 6 actors and the director and the DP and a couple of lighting guys are standing around going, okay, how are we going to make this guy bleed chocolate? And we did. And it's fun. That's a little scary because you don't know if it's going to work or not. But
right.
But it's always fun. And to see the final product is always a kick, too.
And would you say, Trevor, that you have the same personality and that, well, I guess with a background in improv, it's pretty easy for you to just kind of pick up and go with whatever.
It is. And I enjoy it, too. It's fun. It's also a little threatening, but the threatening part is what makes it exciting, is when you know that this could fail miserably and there would be no one to blame but yourself, because you can't blame it on the guy who wrote the script. You know, it's just you trying to create something out of nothing. And it is a lot of fun. And I think Brian and I have similar personalities in that sense and a similar creativity in that sense, though I think one of the other reasons why we work together is I'm far more conventional in terms of story and plot line and wanting to have, you know, having certain characters in certain places. And I think Brian and I have this nice, there's a nice sort of tug and pull.
A balance
that, okay, we have in these projects where we sort of balance each other pretty well. And sometimes I just have to let it go and go, okay, it's going to be weird, but I trust it's going to work. It usually does. And then I think there are times when I'm able to kind of pull those things back and make them a little more sort of, I don't want to say mainstream, because I don't think we've ever actually done anything mainstream.
Right. Actually, I've just heard, I've met somebody new at a Filmmakers Republic meeting who's throwing us in a totally new place, but she described it as Apollonian and Dionysian, where Apollonian is very, you know, you're doing it by the rules and by the book, and mm-hmm. Dionysian is, let's take off our pants and party. You get a mix of that.
So maybe you're Apollonian.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
take off my pants in the most conventional way.
Yeah. There you go.
So then that
is sort of the traditional thing with films, is you give them something that they know, but you twist it in a way that they've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to, you know, find that balance.
It seems as though you have found that balance. I don't know if you really need to keep searching for that.
No, but every time it's a new project and you got to figure out what's the twist.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, to me, it's, you know, I've got a Hindi vampire movie and it's just like, okay, well, what the heck is that? Mantra was a Buddhist horror film. It's like, okay, we've never seen one of those before. What does that feel like?
Mm-hmm.
But why give an audience something that they've seen before?
Mm-hmm.
Let's give them like Billy Barnwell is this weird inside look to children's theater. It's sort of like the dark side of, you know, Charlotte's Web.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay, what happens, you know, behind the scenes of basically the plot is a children's theater troupe putting on this classic children's story, and it's this morality tale, but behind the scenes they're entirely dysfunctional, nymphomaniac, drug popping, you know,
probably not so different from reality.
the fact is, it's actually, the story is based on experiences that I had as a younger man, mm-hmm. touring with a children's theater. And sort of, you know, I mean, it's fictionalized to a large extent, but
and entertaining
Right. But what's true about it is that all of these people that I remember from this experience were very passionate about children's theater, but their lives, their personal lives, were such a mess.
Mm-hmm.
As all people's are. I mean, everybody right. has these things that they're trying to navigate. But
right.
when you stick six very creative and very fractured people in a van and make them drive around the East Coast for 6 months at a time, it tends to the neuroses multiply and grow and fester, and things become very interesting. And it was also, you know, I remember once being told that if you get on a bus and you can't find the crazy person, you're it. And it was kind of that, and it was kind of that experience of like going into something thinking that you're the normal guy in the situation, and then finding out that you're just as messed up as everybody else.
Right.
So,
right.
But it was a lot of fun, and it has translated, and it's another one of those examples where I came at the story. You know, I wrote the story. I think at first I kind of envisioned the story as a drama, and then Brian and I started kicking it around, and the more we talked about it, the funnier the reality of it became, to this point now where it's kind of this. It's dark comedy. There's still elements of tragedy and darkness in it, but it's very funny. I mean, at least everybody that has read it with us thinks it's pretty funny. So
great.
It's the absurdity within it. It just starts to say, why does the guy in the chicken costume who plays Chucky Chicken have a black eye? Well, the reality is because he got in a bar fight last night, but he's standing in front of a bunch of third graders explaining that, well, when you live in the barn, you know, sometimes things get out of hand.
Yeah. He's just making it up on the
right.
fly.
And each of the characters in the screenplay, each of the characters comes at this book. Because in the story, the play that they're doing is based on this, it's a faux children's classic. It's like Charlotte's Web, but it's
right.
a completely fictional story that I made up to kind of go
yeah.
along with it. But all of the characters are coming at the story from their own sort of experience with it as kids. And they mm-hmm. all have their different interpretation of what this Billy Barnwell story is really about. So for one who's a born-again Christian, it's a religious parable.
Mm-hmm.
And for the nymphomaniac, who's this very empowered woman, it's a proto-feminist tract. So
mm-hmm.
So they're all kind of coming at it.
Everybody
with their
has their own initiative.
Right. And
yeah.
and it creates, obviously, it creates, you know, friction and friendships and alliances and some pretty fractured relationships and some fist fights. And
I'm glad you brought up Billy Barnwell, because that's a trailer I hope my listeners will go check out. So why don't we give them the URL right now and give them a chance to go look at that, and we'll be back in just a moment. Where's the URL where they can find your trailer?
Well, if they go to YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Go to YouTube and search for Billy Barnwell's Favorite Friends.
It should be there.
It should be there.
Okay.
Or kickstarter.com/Billy Barnwell.
Right. The fundraiser is not still going on, but.
But you can still find the trailer on the Kickstarter website.
All okay. right.
And we still need funds.
And we still need funds.
Or
all
you
right.
can, or you can Facebook, if you like us, if you like Filmmakers Republic on Facebook, I believe the links to all of the trailers that we've done for Billy Barnwell, as well as, I guess, trailers for everything else that we've done, are probably on the Facebook page somewhere, or there are links to them.
Great. Let's give listeners a moment to check that out, and we'll come back and discuss Billy Barnwell a little bit more on The Wendy Edwards Show. The Photographers are an acoustic folk duo from Traverse City, Michigan. John Hansen and Maren Hupfer met each other in daycare, and then they reconnected in high school when they discovered they had a mutual interest in making music. Living now in a converted ballroom in Chicago with an array of artists, including two dancers, a cellist, a gender studies graduate, and a Danish painter. Speaking of collaborations, their music is almost fanciful. It's paired with great storytelling lyrics that pull you along with the music. You can find their website at photographersmusic.com. And we've got them right now on The Wendy Edwards Show. The Photographers.
To all of the trees, is it easy to breathe? Do you know you're alive? Under the sky, to all of if you were these things.
Photographers Everything bottle on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm in the studio with Trevor Projeski.
You'll get it right by the way.
You're one for three.
I got it right the first time, right, and ever since then I've slaughtered it.
You're still doing better than most people.
And Brian Weimer of Filmmakers Republic here in Central Virginia, where filmmakers and, well, not just filmmakers, pretty much anyone can come with any desire to work in the film industry in pretty much any capacity as well, whether it's helping to make food on the set or just sitting making sure the script is working out the way it should, helping with lighting or sound, if you want to learn production or camera work. Brian and Trevor are welcoming people from the community who just want to learn about the industry and contribute in a positive way.
And also, what I want to add, too, is that we're committed to making films. We're not there to discuss film theory, whatever. It's all fine and dandy, but we're there to make stuff. And we have a great track record now of forming, and all of a sudden, we've got a huge slew of movies that we're in production on, having finished production on, and moving on. And it's just to say, if you show up, you will be in a movie. And if you say something at the table, however absurd, a talking dog, you know,
it may end up in a movie.
It will quite likely end up in a movie.
And that brings me to Billy Barnwell and his favorite friends, in that there are some talking animals in that movie. And hopefully our listeners have listened to the trailer by now. And let's elaborate a little bit. Tell them how this project came about.
The desire was actually, when we, one level within an independent film is that I'm a pretty much of a pragmatist, which is to say that I realized that in independent film, it's hard to get distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of independent filmmakers start in exploitation film, which it could be a biker movie or girls in prison or whatever. Whatever the theme at that moment could be popular.
Does that mean that there's some shock value to what they're doing?
No, it's just whatever's cool. Like if right now, you know, asteroid movies are popular, to go make an asteroid movie would be exploitation.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, and you know, blaxploitation comes from that, but it wasn't exploiting African Americans. It was basically to say, wow, there are all these movies like Shaft and whatever out. Let's go make some more of those. So, and one of the main genres that exploitation always kind of goes back to is horror. And horror is a fairly critic-proof genre where you can come out with a movie and nobody's going to like say, oh, you know, it's terrible, don't go see it, because they'll always have fans. You'll always have somebody go, and there are conventions around these things. It's one of the things that you can put a movie out and it'll be shown somewhere. Somebody will watch it. Somebody will buy it. And you just have to follow a couple of rules. And if you make half a decent movie, as opposed to doing a drama or even a comedy, which, you know, so you start there. And believe me, like, Spielberg, all these people, they started in horror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reality. Jaws. I mean, Jaws wasn't even Spielberg's first. Actually, allegedly, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was. There's a little, go look it up. Go Google it. So we did our horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're taking this step into a bit of a dangerous place. Dark comedy,
mm-hmm.
indie dark comedy,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless you have a star attached to all this, it's like, who's going to watch that? Where are you going to find that? What theater? And so it's a little dangerous. First, okay, you know, it's something that we're used to, but how do you sell it? So for us, it was to find a script that was good enough that we thought had a chance to get into festivals, like big festivals, Sundance,
mm-hmm.
South by Southwest, that sort of thing, and to attract stars when we're going to go to LA and try to get two stars in this thing. But Trevor had written this script, and we had talked about it a while, and it seemed like really ripe territory that you could communicate to somebody, and that seemed interesting enough and really fertile enough to have a lot of, wow, that guy has a lot of potential for really funny stuff, as well as not just some pulpy comedy.
Right,
but
it would
insight.
Make sense because the story has a plot.
Right.
And it's something people can relate to and follow.
Right, but not just that, but that there are real insights into real human behavior, and there are some real dramatic, actually, Trevor wrote a short story based on it that is about a bipolar breakdown that an individual had in his apartment. And it's tragic and
mm-hmm.
crazy, But it was, you know, the script was somewhat fair. Actually, Trevor, you tell the genesis of that.
Well, it started, like Brian said, I mean, this is something that happened to me. I mean, a lot of the film is based on experiences I had, and I carried them with me for 20 years. I mean, just thinking about them, and I had written some things about them. But as I got older and kept thinking back on that, it really was sort of one of those formative kind of experiences, and the time really was formative. And I think, and what I think comes out in the script, or what eventually came out in the script, was that it was tragic, and it was funny, and it was entertaining, and nobody died. I shouldn't give away the ending, but it just had all of those elements that just make good stories, and it had the tension and the conflict and all of those things that were supposed to be there. And I just felt like the time was right to write it. And I think one of the things, you know, I told someone before, you know, the only thing that stopped me from writing a screenplay before is that I didn't know anybody who could actually make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know lots of people who can help us make a movie. And so I think that just that impetus was there to write that story and to bring it to film. And I think that one of the things, you know, once Brian and I started working together, and one of the things that I recognized in him that makes me excited about it is that balance, that push and that pull. Because for me, I'm a sentimentalist, and I like the happy ending, and I like things to turn out.
I am a complete sap monster. Yeah, I understand.
I like things to turn out happy, and
right.
And so that's my tendency to go in that direction. And one of the things I recognized immediately in bringing this to Brian was that he was going to bring the darkness out in it that needs to be there to make it a better story. And mm-hmm. it seemed like a script that, you know, was really ripe for that contest between us, to that push and that pull. And I think hopefully it comes out, you know, it shows in the script that there was a lot of thought put into how this story was going to, how this plot was going to develop and how these characters develop. Even though it's based somewhat in reality, the characters have really been we spent a lot of time really fleshing them out and drawing them out. So,
So where that goes is, I mean, what happens at our meetings too is people pitch ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about the things that we've done. Okay, Danger Zombies Run did this, and you all congratulate each other. And then we say, let's pitch new ideas. And some people have half-baked ideas. Some people just go, I've got an idea about a fly that can control the weather. And, you know, you're just like, okay, show me the script. And like, well, I thought you'd write it.
It begins with a single blade of grass.
And you know, Trevor brought a finished script. And we did a table reading. And everybody just, their eyes opened up and their jaws dropped. And they said, that isn't a great script. And we've kept on revising it, and it's an even better script now. And we just did a second reading, and people were literally, I mean, I'm not making this up, they were in tears laughing so hard during certain parts that it's like, wow, okay, well, that's really good. And there were some actors who really brought some life to it. So it's getting to a place that, you know, we're really happy with it, and it really energizes all the people. And they're like, wow, how do I get involved? How do I get involved? Because they realize this is going to be a real movie and it has real potential.
Right.
So for us now, that's the thing about producing a movie. It's a lot. It's an act of will, and mm-hmm. it's an act of belief, because it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist right now. It's a figment in our imagination. But if we keep on working towards it, we get closer to that thing that's over the hill that you can't see. But you have to have somebody, and I get to play that role of the Pied Piper that goes, come on, it's over there, just a little further. And they have to go, well, he sees it, I guess, so let's go with him. He's done things before. He's taken us to places. So,
do you see it, Brian, or do you just,
yeah.
or do you just realize it'll happen if everybody just keeps coming together?
Well, part of it is a will that you have to keep the people going. But I, as a director and as a producer, really have to have a concrete notion in my head of what it's going to look and feel like. Now, of course, when it really gets done, it often does not fulfill that,
right?
Because that's the nature of
filmmaking. Well, you have a bunch of people right. contributing to the same idea.
Right.
However, you do have to, I think, have some vision for it.
Oh, yeah.
In order to lead people in a direction.
Right. Yeah. And if you can't communicate that vision, or if you can't just get people to believe in you,
mm-hmm.
and for me, I've made a very big point of whenever I propose something, I go and do it. I go say, we're going to go shoot a Buddhist horror movie, and we go do it. Like I shot a documentary in Peru 2 years ago, and it would just say, people kind of propose it, and I said, let's go do it. And so I went, and I spent $10,000, and I got us tickets to go, and we went down with a crew, and we stayed for a month, and we came back, and we have it. And it's just like, okay. I'm going to go do it. We're going to go do it. So if we propose something, it's going to happen, and we're going to, and we get better and better at it. And this is going to be our best film yet. And I think people see that. And that's part of the motivation. That's part of the encouragement. So even if they don't understand exactly how this comes together, and this is a very tightly written narrative script, probably more tight than anything we've worked on before, where mm-hmm. other stuff is very metaphorical or metaphysical, that they're just like, I have
kind
no
of anything
idea
goes.
What's going
yeah.
on in Brian's head, but yeah. I guess he gets it. but, you know, this is, you know, you can imagine it. It's the Princess and the Pea that they put on at the Paramount, you know, run by, you know, the cast of Taxi. You mm-hmm. know, it's, you know, Lotka and Reverend Jim and whatever. It's like all these crazy, weird people who... I mean, and for me, I like taking kind of pot shots at things. And this isn't Shakespeare. This isn't, you know, they're not doing Chekhov on stage. It's what's up with those adults, those like full-grown people who are going and playing a pig mm-hmm. on stage, which, you know, it's just, it's very humbling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your audience is, well, to a certain extent, they're third graders. And it's like, well, what do they care whether it's good or bad? But there's a point made in the screenplay where it's like, no, actually kids know make-believe. Mm-hmm. And if you screw up, they'll rip you apart. So there's
so
this
true.
Absurdity. It's so for me, it's ripe. And it's a really well-written thing. That's what everybody's acknowledged about it. So that's where we are within the Filmmakers Republic, where everybody's just like, keeps on asking me, you know, where are we on Billy Barnwell? I'm like, well, we're still fundraising. We've got to raise... the point now, we have to raise $100,000 to make it.
How much have you raised so far?
10.
10,000?
10.
And how much you need? 100,000?
Yeah, we need.
You don't happen to have any of that on you, do you?
Actually, I have already contributed to Billy Barnwell.
There you go.
And
as everyone should.
And I probably will continue to in some way.
Right.
And you know, that's a kind of a point I wanted to go back to when we had started talking about the Filmmakers Republic and all of the people that were involved. And I think a point that clearly we want to make too is that there's plenty of room for the patrons of film too who want to contribute in ways that, you know, they may not be filmmakers or actors or writers but want to produce and want to be part of a film that gets made. So there's plenty of room for people who want to executive produce and contribute financially to this film. And,
right.
and I think, you know, the more contributors we have, the more people behind us, the better film we're going to be able to make too.
Right.
And even within that, it's to say people can contribute materially. We have scenes that take place in a barn because some of this book we see in the imagination of a child and we bring it to life. There will be a barn with talking sheep and stuff like that. There, you know, we have to have costume people make the costumes for these. And I will either be paying out of pocket for it or they can be contributed. Mm-hmm. And we can go either way on it. And actually, we do hopefully get 10 grand back from the state. All depends. There's an incentive program that you can potentially get 10% if Steven Spielberg hasn't taken all the money yet. there's a major production here of Lincoln that they're very happy to bring here, and you know, it potentially will dry up some of those resources.
You know, we need to contact him and let him know what he's doing to us.
Dear Steven, stop it.
Sympathy.
Yeah.
No, I'd be very happy to work on his stuff, but you know, I want to do my stuff too. And
absolutely.
It's not like we're entitled to it. It's just a nice support. And to me, my point is that it creates an industry in the state, because if we can train, and we've had literally 100 people on set. If we can train all those people in filmmaking and create a real industry for filmmaking in this state, that creates jobs. And it keeps the money here. It's not somebody from Hollywood coming here and giving a couple crumbs to say, oh, you can be an extra and you can be a whatever, and then leaving. It's to say, no, we're going to have people, like if we can, I don't know, we could take $2 million and make 20 independent films in the state every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Why not, man? What state does that?
I want to follow the money trail and find out where it will take Billy Barnwell and his famous friends coming up on The Wendy Edwards Show.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I remember Wendy always with a smile and always willing to share whatever needed. I'm excited by what Wendy's doing, because there are so many artists in this world that seem to get lost in the cracks or have difficulty finding a voice. Best about Wendy is her ability to interview people and to really look into the heart of the person and see what they're about as a human being. what it is in them that makes their art come to life.
And we're back with Brian Weimer and Trevor Projeskytv.
I think I'll just go back to
Mr. P.
From, Mr. P, yeah.
From the Filmmakers Republic. They've come together for an independent film called Billy Barnwell and His Favorite Friends, which is based on a child's...
It's based on a play that was based on a children's story that was never actually written.
Okay, thank you. It was dreamed up in someone's head, Trevor's head, and he was able to put it together and bring a script to the Filmmakers Republic where they did some readings and found it to be a very good project to work on. And Brian, you were talking about how you still need donations for Billy Barnwell, and I'd like to know, as you get those donations, where will it take a project?
Essentially, the money goes to, and we're looking at raising $80,000, and I'm not allowed to say investors because that breaks securities laws. So I'm not saying investors.
What would we say, donators?
Right now, we're allowed to say donators.
Okay.
yes.
And you have $10,000 toward that end.
And we have $10,000 toward it, potentially get 10 more from the state.
Okay.
As a tax incentive.
So potentially from our listeners and anyone else.
Angels out there.
Yes.
No, it is $80,000, and I potentially have one person who might back it already. But the notion is, and I'm not going to lie to anybody, you know, it's an independent film. I mean, it's a very challenging field, but our notion is to take it to festivals. And if it's good enough, then, you know, hey, we win the lottery and we get to Sundance with it.
Mm-hmm.
Other festivals are Tribeca, South by Southwest in Austin. There's one in Canada, and these are market festivals, and that's where buyers are and distributors, and they take it, and they either, you can have a theatrical distribution, which is really nice, and part of that money is to go to Hollywood and go hire, you know, some name actors so that you, because everybody, that's what happens when you go look at, okay, what movies are playing, and well, that's got so-and-so in it, and that's, names sell movies,
mm-hmm.
So we're going to go get a couple names. But the rest of it, I mean, it's totally all Virginia, with the exception of probably two Los Angeles actors.
Right.
It's expensive. And it's expensive just running a crew. I don't want all volunteers on the crew because you can't get a commitment for a sustained several weeks of shooting with all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to pay them. And there are costs, there are legal costs. I mean, it's going to cost me $4,500 just to incorporate this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So everything kind of adds up. And a lot of it comes out of my pockets and always has.
But as you said, you know, you're a man of your word and you mm-hmm. have integrity. And if you say you're going to follow through on a project, you're right. going to follow through on the project.
Right. And I come from a marketing background. I used to do advertising in New York. So for me, I don't get into a project unless I know what I'm going to do with it. So it's to say we go to the festivals and then we get a distributor or we take it ourselves to a limited theatrical distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can take it to sell it online. You sell digital rights. You sell nation rights. You sell all sorts of things. And I find it to be a accessible movie. So it might play in Europe. It might play in Latin America. It might play other places. So I realistically say that, you know, gee, I'm going to make back my $80,000. And it's not too inconceivable that it could, you know, do very well. So, but that's the risk you play. And,
mm-hmm.
but that's the risk I've chosen as an independent filmmaker to say, I'd like to take risks. I don't mm-hmm. want a day job where I just know what's going to happen at the end of the day. I want that to me, I don't play the lottery because I am the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
I fix my own odds and I make the odds better for myself. So next year we're going to have more films and a lot better chance. And this is one of those huge stabs that say, hey, this local community is going to be put on the map.
This is the kind of film that can put our local community
right,
on the map.
Right.
And that's that's been the kind of the hope for me. My first goal after writing the script was to not be the only person who was excited about it because mm-hmm. I was carrying this thing around going, man, I think I actually wrote something.
I have something here.
Like, I think I might have something here. And for a while, it was like, I'm the only person who thinks this is good because I wrote it. But then, you know, people were looking at it and showing it to people, getting feedback from people. It started, you could see that the interest was percolating. And now I think, it, you know, as Brian said, I mean, it would probably be a great achievement to have a film that actually brought attention to Central Virginia, and people said that people could watch the film and say that, you know, these people know what they're doing. I mean, if you have a film project and you want it made well, and you want it made by people
to the Filmmakers Republic,
care and yeah. who are interested, take it to Central Virginia, because there are the directors and actors and writers and crew people there who will make your film and make it well, and probably make it for less money than you're going to get it made in Los Angeles or New York. And so that's it would be a pretty big feather in our cap if we were able to draw that kind of attention,
especially for a place that has a major film festival here. I mean, the Virginia Film Festival is a big deal, and it keeps on getting bigger. And mm-hmm. and if this can be a little, you know, hey, opening night movie or something like that, wow, what a great triumph for, you know, us. Last year was Black Swan. Hey, maybe next year it's going to be ours.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with all of those people who said I'd never amount to anything. Nothing.
They're all in the script. What are you talking about? No, but how cool and how validating to know that things that you've been sitting on, you know, a script that you've been sitting on is actually worthwhile to other people, not just to yourself.
Well, and the other inspiring thing about that is that, you know, and I mean, I've always felt like I could write. I mean, I've been writing for years, and so I've never lacked confidence in my writing. But again, it was part of that, you know, it was part of that not knowing people or not having access to people, not really being able to share that vision with people who could do anything about it.
I mean,
my wife would read it and go, wow, that's really nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, she doesn't have a
camera.
She'd
probably be supportive, but she doesn't have the means.
But having this community of people that we've kind of pulled together and that is growing and that we're nurturing that can now actually take this idea and share it with me and share this vision and make it happen is a big thing. And what it really does is now it makes me think about all the other things I've been sitting on that I'm developing in my head as we're developing this one on paper, that mm-hmm. there are lots of other stories to tell. Brian mentioned the dad band, this dad band idea about doing either a documentary or a mockumentary or some kind of story about all of the guys out there, you know, middle-aged guys like ourselves who are still rocking in bands at night and then going home and getting the kids up and getting them to school in the mm-hmm. morning and helping with homework and doing all those things that dads do. And, you know, that's an idea that we've been talking about for a while. And now, you know, if this film has the success that we hope it has, then there are going to be people who are going to want to see the next thing that we do. If it's, you know, if it has that same kind of energy, so it's kind of opening up these doors of creativity and making it safer actually to keep pulling these ideas out and keep developing them.
You talk about dads and working in rock bands and things like that, and you two are dads working in the film industry. Billy Barnwell and his favorite friends, you're working on that, and I saw the trailer for that, and hopefully our listeners have already. What I noticed in that is you open with a dad telling a story to his child. Well, when you described Amoeba Films earlier and sitting around the table, it sounds a lot like that, where you are sitting with essentially a child and just making up a tale as you go along. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm familiar with as a mom. We'll be sitting there and my daughter's ready to go to sleep. No, she doesn't do it now that she's 14. But when she was younger, you know, tell me a story. And so I would make up, you know, okay, there was once this princess named, and she'd throw a name in and she'd say, but no, that's not how it goes. It goes this way. And the prince says this. And I'd say, okay, the prince says this. And then, you know, and on, in comes a unicorn. And, you know, so you have to just go with improv and then bring in someone else's creativity, and it becomes a collaborative story. And it sounds like you're pretty much doing that with adults.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
it is the best part of the process. It is that kind of childlike, just sort of letting your imagination go and play. I mean, most of us, I think, if not all of us in the Filmmakers Republic, and probably a lot of people out there, you know, clearly remember getting that first, you know, picking up the video camera, getting your friends together in middle school and saying, let's go make a movie. And it's that pure and sort of that raw. I know with Fiber Optic Angel that Brian mentioned, which was this Christmas, we made a Christmas short. It's like a 12-minute long Christmas film that mm-hmm. we made. It started out with actually my daughter, and again, it was one of those things. My daughter got this fiber optic glow-in-the-dark angel, you know, for Christmas one year, and we'd go to sleep staring at it every night. And it was just a beautiful image to me mm-hmm. to see that. And that developed into a song that I wrote about that fiber optic angel. And so 2 years later, I came to the Filmmakers Republic meeting and said, I've got this great idea for a story about this fiber optic treetop angel that comes to life and blah, blah. And I think a week later, it was in the can. It was a finished film. But it really just started with that, you know, gotta have this idea. And,
yeah.
and it just, people jumped on and it turned into a film. And it really is, it's the most fun thing that I can think to do. It's really fun.
And it's more than storytelling. I mean, I think that people have a responsibility in our culture to keep stories alive and to keep telling stories. And it's retelling old ones or making up old stories that you're retelling. But it's also to, at the end of the day, is it just to entertain people or is it to make them think? And to me, I make films because I want to make people think. And it isn't because I want them to think the way I do. I just want to challenge their assumptions. And even like making a horror film with Mantra that we made, it was this Buddhist horror film. And it was really encouraging at festivals. People would come back to me after we had screened it a day later and say, I'm still thinking about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And these were like really jaded, like other directors of horror films, and they'd seen everything. There was a guy, Michael Berryman, who's sort of a legend within horror films, and he called me aside at one of the things. He actually told the director of the festival, who directed this thing? I want to find this person. And he approached us, and he was just like, this is the best film at the festival. And, you know, if anybody tells you to change it, don't touch it. It's perfect. It's great and great compliments. But it was just like, wow, it's that people went and it wasn't just 2 hours of wasted time or even just entertainment or titillation or whatever. It actually sunk in some way.
How did you challenge people to think in Mantra?
Mantra, well, the whole notion was that to me, I've studied some Buddhism and I was in India and I did like a 10-day retreat and all this kind of crazy stuff. But a lot of Buddhism is a meditation on the connections between desire and suffering. And to me, having watched a lot of horror films as a kid and things like that, that a lot of horror films are also meditations on desire and suffering. And why not take that audience who's expecting one sort of a thing? I mean, it's a fairly, you know, the model of it is, you know, some people who go to a camp retreat and, you know, start dying, but twist it. And instead of at the end, you know, to really change their expectations of what's going to happen in this and who the bad guys are and turn it around. And at the end, it's absolutely unexpected and completely baffling to some people who are like, what the, you know, where did the, and some of them are very upset. Some of them come out of it with different things, but I can't say that all Buddhists go to it and go, wow, that was the Dharma. Good job. Some of them are just like, okay, a little bit ruffled. But for me, I studied drama in college, and there's a notion of the theater of cruelty, which is very cathartic. And it's to take your assumptions and in somewhat drastic way to turn them on their head and let you come out of the theater and then figure it out for yourself. And it really bubbles up stuff, and you can do it in any way. Humor is actually a great way to do it, and there's a lot of humor.
I was about to say that. I noticed that in Danger Zombies Run, when you did bring that darker aspect, you also brought humor with it. So it made it so that it was twisted. I won't say that it wasn't, but it was also funny, and you could laugh at it and yourself.
Right. We talk about Danger Zombies Run as a philosophical zombie movie. It isn't some deep, you know, Dostoevsky and Kant and whatever. It's fairly superficial. I mean, it's analyzing why we are obsessed with zombies to a certain extent. And, you know, works for some people, it doesn't work for others, but there's a nice conversation. To me, Billy Barnwell fits within that scope because here you have this morality tale that's being told, like we as adults tell our children these stories and then we go have a fight with our spouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a huge hypocrisy.
When you say these stories, what stories?
Stories. Any classic children's stories, whether it's Charlotte's Web or Stuart Little.
The Lion King, The Little Mermaid. I mean, all of these stories really create these archetypes of what it means to be a good person. And all of those stories were created by adults who were probably hiding at least 2 or 3 skeletons in the closet. You know, just because they're adults, they're not bad people, but they're people.
Well, we're multidimensional,
right? And
people,
they deal with adult problems and adult moral dilemmas, and really, I think the thing that I loved about the first trailer that we did for the Kickstarter campaign is that you do have this beautiful little girl whose dad is reading her this bedtime story, and the pitch of the film, I felt really captured what we were going for in the sense that the trailer itself had this sense of innocence about it and the bedtime story and all the things that that means to people, but layered under this, basically this guy who's just trying to pitch his film and get something done and get something made and sell people on this idea. And I think, I hope that the film itself, the script itself, straddles that line as well. That this is a story about good people
mm-hmm.
who also happen to be really bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it's probably true of every single one of us. And it rings true. It seems to ring true.
Brian, you were going somewhere when you said that we tell our children these stories and then we go off in the other room and we're arguing together.
Well, I think we all lead lives of hypocrisy. I mean, say we take our culture, which is obsessed with sex, but is extremely puritanical. But we lay these sort of models for our kids and say, don't do this or don't do what I do. And we try to find models for that. And a lot of these stories, they do, you know, show flawed characters who triumph. But the reality in our lives is that we don't triumph. And that's actually one of the saddest things as a screenwriter, is that you write these stories. Even Billy Barnwell is about somebody who eventually triumphs. But that's the difficulty as a screenwriter. As a screenwriter, you write a story that's about you.
Mm-hmm.
Every character in there is you, but you take the worst version of yourself, you put that person through trials, and at the end it becomes the best version of yourself, and then the story's over. But then what you find as a screenwriter is the next one you write, you're back at square one again.
Mm-hmm.
You're again the worst version of yourself because you realize that you don't change that much. But through films we get to see, and stories, we get to see people who go through extreme trials. And usually a film isn't about just what happened today. It's an extraordinary day in that person's life that was a turning point. And in this particular case, it's about this person who's modeled on Trevor who goes through a challenge. And do they rise to this challenge, you know? And how did it shape their lives? For, you know, Star Wars, it's Luke Skywalker, you know? And you take somebody who can't beat these odds, these incredible odds. How's Luke going to destroy the Death Star or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, you find that they find a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually is not an act of will. He doesn't want to do it at the beginning. He wants to go, like, shoot swamp rats or something like that. And, you know, but he's motivated to do this. So why is this character motivated? And within the story, there is a plot about, you know, how this children's story and this sort of screwed up children's theater group actually has to meet this giant challenge where they have to go put on the show in front of PBS and a giant civic auditorium, and they are absolutely incapable of keeping themselves together. Meanwhile, somebody's having a bipolar breakdown,
mm-hmm.
and everybody else is having fights and rebelling.
Things that happen,
and
they naturally happen.
Right.
Yeah.
But what are the stakes? Are they high enough? You know, is it about life or death? And for some of these people, it is. It turns out to be that something as, you know, silly as children's theater can become this. It could be the end for you.
Tragic.
So
it was an interesting experience in writing it, too, that by the time I got through the end of the first draft, I realized that the character who is based on me was the least interesting one in the story. so I said, I have to change that. I have to start fictionalizing myself a little bit here. But it is really it's an interesting process to go through when you're taking something from memory and trying to translate that into a relatable story that has some universality and some meaning for other people other than yourself.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's hard. And it was hard the first time. It was hard the sixth draft. It was hard the eighth draft. And it doesn't get any easier. And I think the closer we get to knowing that it's done, you can see it. I mean, you can see that where that how that character is developed through 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 drafts.
Right.
And how they're getting closer to sort of that idealized person that you were kind of shooting for to begin with.
And you're getting closer to some Hollywood actors and some showings in places that Charlottesville movies haven't been yet.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, Jake Gyllenhaal, if you're listening, dude, you're it, okay? You're the guy.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Jason Schwartzman, actually.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, he would work, too. He would work, too. That'd be good.
Don't kid yourself. They'll take whoever you are.
Yeah, so but that's the one key thing, too, is that we want to present a screenplay to actors in Hollywood that they can really put their teeth into, that is not some pulpy thing that's just going to be the latest, you know, thing that lasts a week at the Regal, but has some depth that they can really say, wow, you know, that to a certain extent, there is an Oscar role in this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a girl who goes through a serious bipolar breakdown, and the person who portrays this, if they do it right, I mean, it's that kind of role that it's actually
could give acclaim to someone.
It's fairly stereotypical. I mean, people do win Oscars when they play, you know, the person, you know, who can only move their left foot or whatever. But it's you give them these challenges and you say, how do you portray that? And this has that within it. So I see that possibility. But more than that, it has this center of it that is about the hypocrisy of our culture and the hypocrisy of ourselves. And to me, movies are therapy, even writing screenplays is
But
therapy.
Not just the hypocrisy, Brian, but laughing at it,
right,
too.
Right, I mean, right. You have to acknowledge it, yeah.
Yeah, this isn't something where, you know, someone's going to go see Billy Barnwell and his favorite friend and leave like, man, life is terrible.
No, we have to laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's really where I think that people have all sorts of conversions, political conversions, whatever. Political cartoons are incredibly, I have a brother who's a political cartoonist, and it's a way that people can see their own situation and see the ridiculous nature, the absurdity of it, and then laugh about it.
You know, Jon Stewart is Jon Stewart because he's able to show us things that we generally take seriously in a way that we can go, God, we're ridiculous that we're worried about that. So
yeah. And The Onion, I think of The Onion,
right,
too.
Right. Absolutely.
There's farsity there. And I have two questions for you before we break for the rest of the evening, and I'll come back to them in just a moment. Let's listen to this one from the photographers Ursa Minor on The Wendy Edwards Show.
Little streamed across fire.
That's the photographers on The Wendy Edwards Show. Thanks for listening. I'm Wendy Edwards. We are just about to finish up this episode, and I am in the studio with Trevor. I'm just going to let you do it.
Przewski.
And Brian
Weimer. That's a tough one.
Weimer. Weimeroski. He Americanized it.
Weimeroski. Of the Filmmakers Republic here in Central Virginia, and they are working on a current project, Billy Barnwell and His Favorite Friends. And they're looking at some Hollywood actors for this film, and they're still needing some financial backing. You could see their trailer on YouTube if you just go ahead and put in the search bar, Billy Barnwell and His Favorite Friends. It should come up for you. And they did have the trailer out on a Kickstarter campaign, which has finished and mm-hmm. was successful.
Yeah.
But the trailer's still there on Kickstarter as well.
Kickstarter.com/Billy Barnwell.
Thank you. All right, and I said before the break, I have two more questions for you before we go for the night. The first one is, are you still offering any support back for those people who contribute to the movie? I know through Kickstarter, when you have a project, right. you do offer swag to people as they donate. Will you continue to do that?
Yeah, it won't be probably through Kickstarter, but if somebody approached me individually and said, oh, we saw what you were offering on Kickstarter, that for, you know, $25 we can get a DVD or whatever it was, you know, and I would absolutely say, yeah, we'll honor all of that. And people have written us checks and things like that on that basis.
Okay.
So, yeah.
We have lots of, like, really cool plastic water bottles, drinking bottles.
Right. Well, one key thing, too, with this movie was that it's based on this fictional book, this fictional, you know, classic of children's literature.
Mm-hmm.
And we're writing that book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having it illustrated and stuff. And we're going to have that book produced. So one of the premiums that we were offering was a
published copy of the book.
And so, you know, but for me, it is to have a completion. So because we're writing the book. We're writing the stage play based on the book. We're going to take that stage play and bring it to schools and actually put it on stage. And then we're going to make the film about the stage play that's about the book. We're even creating the writer of the book who doesn't exist. We're going to get him his own, like, Wikipedia page and whatever. He's Hugh Chalfant, who, you know, wrote these things and then was blacklisted, you know, because they thought that his barnyard morality tales were communist propaganda mm-hmm. and whatever. That it's like, okay, let's really fulfill everything about it. Because once you get that really dense notion in the backstory, then you can really fulfill on the front story and say, you know, that we're not just making this up. It has a root in something. And mm-hmm. It has a root in something.
Concrete.
You know, yes.
Yeah.
And it's fun to just keep peeling back those layers of unreality and seeing how far back you can go mm-hmm. in creating something. And it is that weird process of working backwards that's kind of made this really interesting, because it started out as something that really happened and has actually become something six layers deep in fiction, you know? So it's kind of, mm-hmm. it's been interesting.
It still has that ring of reality to it, or it wouldn't work.
Hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, most good fiction has that root of reality. It's what makes it good. I mean, even fantasy,
mm-hmm.
You know, people are fascinated with Harry Potter, but they wouldn't be if there wasn't truth and reality in some aspect of Harry Potter that mm-hmm. people connect to and relate to. You know, he's a very, very human being, mm-hmm. wizard that he is.
You don't believe in wizardry? What?
All right. And my last question for you both is, it's more of a statement that I'd like you to elaborate on. And that is that I see the Filmmakers Republic as this union of people with clever ideas, or just this union of people with ideas that can be made clever and that can be made more creative. And I see you as people who are driven to make things happen and who have just a spirit about you that, this is going to take me a minute because it's hard to encapsulate, but I know what I mean. I just uh-huh. need to say it. But you have a spirit about you that includes everybody and encourages everybody.
Egalitarian.
Thank you. You have an egalitarian spirit. and that you include everyone, and you really do. You inspire people to just go for it. And Brian, it's something that you said earlier, in that, you know, if you say you're going to do it, you do it. You follow through. And I think that's something that many of us who, like Trevor, have projects that we've been sitting on for a long time, you know, things that we have hope in, or that we believe in, that we're not really sure if we can put it out there or where to put it or who to give it to, or if we can motivate it or generate it ourselves. You're the kind of person that encourages people to just do it.
I think you have to dare to fail. And to me, I used to be an advertising executive in New York.
Okay.
I was an associate creative director at what was ostensibly the largest ad agency on the planet. I had just won a $40 million account for the agency, and I quit. I sold everything I had, and I just said, there's got to be a different way to live. And other people are like, you can't do that. You've made it. You know, you're there. And I said, well, there's got to be more. And I went to Southeast Asia for 6 months, traveled across country for another 2 months, and I ended up re-chinking a log house in Rutgersville just by chance. And then I started growing like seeds for a tomato company and stuff like that.
Careful,
and it was just
careful.
Like, okay. No, there's nothing illicit here. We were just, you know, we were living the American dream. But to me, you have to take risks. You have to, and when you do that, you have to leave behind your safe realm.
It's hard sometimes, though. I'm facing that myself. I've worked years in radio, and here I am putting a podcast out there, just mm-hmm. hoping something will generate from that. So I'm doing the same thing, and I can say it's not easy to leave behind those things that you're very familiar with.
Right. But it's the Filmmakers Republic. I mean, there are a lot of people who have day jobs there who come with a hope that there's something more out there. And we fulfill on that. And what is out there is whatever you want to be out there, because we're creating reality as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that reality going to be? What do you want it to be?
If you film it,
yes,
they will
come. But yeah. You've had to learn. I'm thinking you've had to learn to just trust that that will happen, because you went from having this amazing executive job in an ad agency mm-hmm. to just winging it and mm-hmm. knowing that whatever you mean to happen will manifest.
Yeah, and it's
how
just,
do you get? Did that happen in India?
No, it's just being cocky. It's just being confident that you can do whatever you set your mind to. And I'm lucky enough to live in a time when digital filmmaking is very economical. I couldn't have done this 20 years ago. It wouldn't have been possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also with social media now that I can get word out about what I'm doing, that wouldn't have been possible either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also surrounding yourself with other people whose abilities are more than your own, and saying, wow, what can you bring to this? There are like people I've collaborated with, like Christian Breeden, and you know, I don't know, there's like so many people.
How does Christian Breeden contribute?
Christian Breeden is a rock star / dragon maker / I mean, the guy has just capability and talent and creativity just coming out of his ears.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people like Devin Sproul that I've worked with. They're mm-hmm. just like, I mean, they're gods. I mean, just, and I'm in awe of everybody's capability more so than myself. I don't find myself.
Yes, I do find you very humble when we work together. You do have humility.
Everybody else, I mean, I have a lot of energy and I have a lot of motivation and I'm very decisive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hem and haw and I just, okay, we're going to do this. But it's based on the input that's given around me. So for me, the more powerful ideas that come around, we will do those. And I don't know, it's about a sort of a dream manifestation. And, you know, it's sort of a little, it's our little Make-A-Wish Foundation. You know, you show up and make a wish and we're going to make it come true. I mean, mm-hmm. And you could say, well, it's a movie and that's not real, but we're creating a reality for people that they are working in a different field. You know, they're not just doing their bean counter job. It's they're coming out and they're doing something else and they're creating something that other people are watching and it's changing their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's really adding to the whole creative atmosphere of this place. And this is a very creative town. I mean, I'm
Charlottesville is packed with talent,
the artists and singers and songwriters. And it's amazing. But I can also speak to, you know, Brian mentioned that a lot of the people in the Filmmakers Republic are, you know, working people who have day jobs. I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of took almost the opposite path of Brian. I was acting and doing improv and really just kind of having fun with that, but then kind of stopped doing that to raise my family, to get a real job that mm-hmm. actually, you know, paid some real money and became a teacher, and was really have been out of acting for 10, 12 years, moved here with my family and found this group of people who we're still doing these things and making it possible for people with day jobs
mm-hmm.
And other careers to still participate in the thing that they loved, in that the art that they love to do. So I think it's really it's a great vehicle for people like myself. And there's a lot of us who used to be actors, who used to be writers, who used to be this other thing that they loved to do, who had to stop for whatever reasons, who can now and on some level participate in those things again. And I think it's the community theater idea amped up a few notches to where it's, you know, we're not comfortable with doing Barefoot in the Park, you know, over and over and over, or Guys and Dolls every year. We're going to take those people with that creative energy and create something new and really try to put something out there that people haven't seen before. So it's community theater on steroids.
Right. Trevor, some final thoughts for our listeners. This show, the Wendy Edwards Show, is about having people, or is it similar to what you're doing with Filmmakers Republic, in that, you know, the people who listen, they do have creativity, they do have ideas. Sometimes they're sitting on that. And I am like Brian in that I want to be someone who contributes to them being more motivated and moving forward with what they think and feel. So some final words from you, Trevor, and then from you, Brian, for people who may be sitting on their ideas right now.
Well, I would say, I would say it really takes, what I had to find again was discipline and forcing myself to cut that time into my life where I could sit down and write. And fortunately, I have a very supportive wife and supportive kids who understood that when I had this idea that it needed to be done and I needed to write this. And so I would say, for people out there who have those ideas, who want to write that first screenplay or that second screenplay or whatever, wherever they are, just giving themselves permission to cut out that hour a day, that 2 hours a day, whenever they have time, to sit down and write and to share those ideas and share that writing with people, and just keep working at it. And when they have something that they think is finished enough to get other people excited with, bring it to us, or bring it to somebody. It doesn't even need to be us. Bring it to somebody who can help you make that come true.
Great. Thank you. Brian?
For me, I had a notion about half a year ago about creating an organization called Unemployed Arts. And the notion was, we live in fairly difficult economic times. There are a lot of unemployed people. There are some unemployed people who work with the Filmmakers Republic. And I wanted to be like a place that if you're not doing anything right now and you have skills, come. And the sort of the motto was, don't just sit there, make something. And if we could get funding and things like that, it would be, you know, a great place for people to work on skills. Like we were talking about Dad Band before. There are people who, you know, have put away a guitar and have some things, have something still to contribute that they haven't had the opportunity to before. And it was to say, we can use you. We can, let's make those, use those talents that you have, that you've been hiding, that you've been developing over all these years and have been afraid to show them, and let's put them all together into something. And for me, that's what it is. It's that we have underemployed arts, all of us within us. And to me, that's what life's about. Life isn't about a 9-to-5 job. Life's about creating things of beauty, things that make you think, and the culture that we live in. So help contribute to that culture. And for me, it's an open door to come and contribute in any way that you can and help change, help, you know, make the culture that your children will grow up in, your grandchildren will grow up in, but be an active force within that and help write those stories that, whether they're hypocritical or not, manifest in a better world.
You can find the Filmmakers Republic on Facebook and help manifest a better world. Thanks for being here, Brian and Trevor.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap it up for this episode of The Wendy Edwards Show. Come on back next week. If you have an active imagination and you are driven to tinker with things and put new ideas together, whether you have an invention or an inventive mind, the next Wendy Edwards Show is for you. Coming up on Thursday, here's one more from the photographers as we say farewell.
not for